Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome to another episode of the Powered by Transova podcast. Today, we're going to be delving into the subject of embryo export, and I'm thankful that we have our embryo export experts, that's a mouthful to say, with us today. We have Emma and Taylor. Why don't you guys go ahead and start off by giving us a little bit of background about yourselves and kind of how you got to be where you are today. Emma, would you like to kick us off?
Thanks, Sarah. My name is Emma Brennigan, and I'm the export coordinator based out of our Maryland Regional Center. I've been with Transova for about 5 years, and prior to doing this job, I was an embryologist who traveled up and down the East Coast for Transova. Before that, I was a technician team lead for a large seeding company, and I graduated from Penn State University.
Very good. Thank you, Emma. Taylor, what about you?
Hey, I'm Taylor Whitehour. I am the export coordinator here in our Iowa location. I have been doing this role for about 8 months now, and I still have a whole lot to learn. Before this, I was actually an agriculture teacher and an FFA advisor for 4 years. I graduated from Colorado State University. I met my husband there, and he is a sixth-generation family farmer, so we moved to Iowa. You can't move a farm. And that's how I got here.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for joining us today. I think the first, maybe most important question is, and maybe Emma, you can start off and tell us about, your role specifically, but what the heck is an export coordinator? What does a typical day look like for you? What are your responsibilities?
Oh, Emily, there is so much variation to this role. And that's one of the reasons why I transitioned into this role from a traveling embryologist, because I love the variability that I see on a day-to-day basis. Our role is so unique because it encompasses every single aspect of this system within Transova. So a day could start out by managing production and making sure samples are taken, and you could be switching to an emergency or a shipment update in a matter of 30 minutes. So being able to be flexible and being able to be accommodate any sort of request that's thrown at you and deal with those challenges as they come is what I love about this job the most. As far as our responsibilities look, we deal with billing, we deal with client communication, we deal with communication with other companies that also do exports. And we always try to be accessible to clients as they need it, because this is a hard thing to explain to people, and we want to be sure that we're there for them.
I'm going to piggyback right off of that and say, you know, that is also the reason that I really like my job, is it's different every day. We're always working on, we always have the same goal, but we're working on different pieces to get to that goal. We work with so many different departments within Transova, and collaborating. One of my favorite things about our job is that we get to collaborate with so many different departments to make these shipments successful.
Very good. You guys have kind of brushed the subject or the topic of this next question, which I know is maybe could be a lengthy answer, but talk through, you guys have talked about, you know, coordinating and communicating with all these departments. Talk through what some of the requirements are if somebody is interested in exporting embryos to another country. And I feel like this is a loaded question.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are so many variable factors when looking at what you need to be prepared for an export aspiration. And our biggest thing is being proactive and trying to plan at least 2 to 4 weeks in advance for an export. So when you're exporting embryos, one of the most important things we try to tell clients is, at the very minimum, if you have no idea where in the world these embryos are going, at least tell your client service representative that embryos must be trypsin treated. That's a very fancy way of saying that the embryo needs to be sanitized. It is a requirement from almost all countries that we export to. And if the embryos aren't trypsin treated, which has to be noted ahead of time, we can't do much from there. And we've had, unfortunately, a couple situations like that. And we're trying to do the best we can to educate on this subject to make sure that regardless of what country you're exporting to, we're covering our bases. And the start of that is making sure you communicate the desire for export so we can TRIPS and treat those embryos on our side.
Yeah, it almost feels like our projects, we have to work backwards. Sometimes we have clients come to us and say, hey, I have some embryos I want to export. When in reality, the project has to start before the production.
Yeah, and I'm going to piggyback off of Taylor one more time because semen requirements have been a very hot topic of conversation. And as we try to make sure that everybody's educated too, we also encourage if you're exporting to Australia or if you're exporting IVF embryos to the European Union, please, please, please make sure that you have semen in store that is qualified. Or if you do not have semen, make sure that we have at least 4 weeks to be able to get that semen in. That's where you can reach out to us, or you can reach out to your client service rep, and we will give you all the information and help facilitate that communication with the bull stud companies if needed.
So this might be an amateur question, Emma, but how do you know if semen qualifies for export? Does it say it on the straw? Does it say it on the cane? Or do I have to call and find out where it was collected?
Definitely not. There are some very fancy terms of EU regulation that just by reading them mean absolutely nothing. So that's where we come in. That's where the bull studs come in. We use the terms Australia qualified semen. We like to abbreviate it AUQ. And we use the term EU qualified semen. When we say that the semen needs to be qualified for Australia or qualified for the European Union, the semen itself has to be processed, stored, and transported under the same qualifications as if we were shipping it directly to Australia or directly to the EU. So the collection itself has to be qualified for export. Not only do we have to worry about making sure that the embryos are qualified, we have to make sure that clients are educated and we communicate the need for this special transportation from the bull stud. And within the past year, this has gotten so much smoother of a process as it once was. And we hope to continue to find ways to make it even more smoother and continue educating everybody about this.
Main thing is ask questions. We have client service reps ask us questions all the time. Clients are reaching out directly with questions. And that is how we make these shipments successful, is when those people are asking the right questions, because there is no wrong question. When they're asking those questions and we're guiding them and directing them in a way that will make the shipment the most successful.
Perfect. Before we get into kind of the ins and outs of an export, I think we need to lay a little bit of groundwork and establish you as our experts, even though we've said it 20 times. But can you tell us, you know, how many embryos did Transova or, you know, the export team at Transova export last year and to what countries?
Oh, these are some pretty exciting statistics that I'm really happy to share with you all today. In total, in 2023, Transova either helped facilitate the export or prepped paperwork on embryos that we created for 11,500 embryos. Of those 11,500 embryos, Transova made 8,000 of those, and we helped facilitate the export of an additional 3,500 embryos not produced by Transova. This is really exciting because that allows us to give our clients better access, more efficient access to those international markets that they may not otherwise have had a route for. So we're looking to continually increase that number of both outside embryos and Transova embryos that we helped exported. In addition to that, we included 600 units of semen in some of the shipments that we sent. And of those 11,500 embryos, Transova personally helped either pack the tank, schedule the international shipment for 4,500 of those embryos. I did a little bit of statistics on the aspiration numbers too. And in 2023, we had clients request over 3,000 aspirations in which those oocytes from those aspirations were fertilized for the intention of export. They may not have all gone internationally, but this is an increase from 2,500 export aspirations in 2022. So we're seeing the demand internationally, and I feel like we're in continuing to encourage that demand, but we're really excited about those statistics and increasing number of exports that we're seeing at Transova.
So you're telling me you haven't been bored is what I'm hearing from that answer.
No, absolutely not. We've been diversifying our export department, establishing new skills to give our clients more accessible routes to international countries. Australia has been a big one that Transova has helped facilitate and consolidate shipments for. Consolidation is just when we assemble these giant groups of embryos and ship them all to an importer that we work with. And it basically helps break the cost down on a per embryo basis, which benefits everybody, most certainly the clients who are both exporting and purchasing the embryos internationally.
That's awesome. I think it's neat that, you know, we're working with clients, obviously, to create genetics that are marketable or, you know, useful to the producer. But now, you know, these are opening so many more doors to what you said, you know, to the demand that's international. So I think that's pretty cool. Can you explain to us a little bit what an average export project looks like? Just kind of like a snippet of what it looks like and what the process is.
Absolutely. Most of the export projects start from an international buyer contacting one of our clients and says, hey, I like your cow. I want embryos on this cow and I would like them in the Netherlands. So then what they do, the client in the US goes about scheduling an aspiration, making sure that all the requirements are met. And that includes semen, that includes donor testing day of aspiration. Then those oocytes get fertilized, they get stored appropriately. And now comes the question, okay, how do we get those embryos to the Netherlands for your buyer? In most cases, we work with a couple awesome companies outside of Transova that do amazing work in consolidating those shipments to the Netherlands. And then ultimately, we move embryos accordingly under appropriate conditions to that consolidator. And then that consolidator from there on out very efficiently ships those embryos overseas. So some of it is completely managed by Transova from the day that those embryos are requested to the day they land in the EU or in South America or in China. Other times, maybe we facilitate the process up until the point where we prep the paperwork and move those embryos to the person who will be shipping. Sometimes we receive embryos that were not made by Transova and then we proceed with shipping. So by expanding some of the things we can do as an export team, by expanding our team and our capacity, we've been able to accommodate all of those different types of export projects. So the general process, I would say in summary, is you get an inquiry or you know of an inquiry for potential or confirmed international sale. You schedule, you make sure all of the requirements are met or at least in progress. And then the final step would be either finding a route or moving those embryos internationally.
Beautifully said.
Thanks, Taylor.
Yeah, I've been here for 8 months and I am learning new things every single day. And the way that these inquiries come about has been different every time. And there's so many opportunities for people to move these embryos. And I feel like we at Transova are very accommodating and we try to make everything we can work.
Yeah, that's an awesome answer. And I think, you know, you, Emma and Taylor, make it sound way easier than what it is too. You know, you're saying call, you get a connection, call, schedule, you know, easy peasy. But I think it's worth noting and maybe getting into the other requirements of your donor selection, embryo qualification, like you were saying, Emma, with the trips and treating and qualifying semen. What other requirements do you often come across that are notable when making these export embryos? And does that vary country to country?
Absolutely. And I'm going to dive into the subject of donor testing. When you're aspirating for Australia versus when you're aspirating for EU, the testing requirements do look a little bit different. Before we even consider the testing, I always encourage people, if you get an inquiry from the European Union or from Australia or from China, please make sure that that specific country does not disqualify donors for having any sort of recessive traits. This gets overlooked a lot, and we're becoming more knowledgeable about it. Our buyers our exporters are becoming more knowledgeable about it. And a perfect example would be the country of Japan. They require Holstein recessive-free statements issued by the breed association, in this case Holstein in my example, to be sent along with the export shipment. So for whatever reason, if your animal could be carrying a genetic recessive, that could put, may or may not, depending on the requirements of the buyer, depending on the requirements of the government, that could potentially pose a risk to those embryos that you make and invest a lot of money in. So we have the communication regarding the genetics of the donor. We have the day of testing, which I started kind of touching on a little bit. Australia requires 4 tests performed the day of aspiration. EU requires 2 tests performed either the day of aspiration or post-aspiration. Japan only accepts in vivo embryos. China only accepts in vivo embryos. So when I talk a little bit about the variability, that's how much I'm talking about. There are some South American countries in which the donor has to reside in a herd and not move, not change those state lines, not spend the night somewhere else, keep that consistent herd of origin for anywhere between 30 to 60 days, depending on the country. So you have to consider the genetics of the donor. You have to consider the health testing. You even have to consider how long that donor has been in the herd. So I could go into every country, but we'd be talking here for 6 hours. So does that give you kind of an overview of some of the requirements that people may have questions on?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's worth noting that if you're going to export to one country and then 6 months later you want to export to another, it's not the same process. Not all countries require the same thing, which I think a lot of clients that I've talked to get hung up on that and say, well, why isn't it all just the same? Well, I think that's a bigger issue and for a different podcast. So,
and don't we wish that it would all just be the same?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Your lives would be much easier if it was kind of a blanket requirement for a single export embryo. But unfortunately, that's not the way it works. Talking about, you know, you guys have done a really great job explaining some of this. And, you know, Emily said you've made it seem quote unquote easy, even though that process you've just described is not easy. Tell me about some of the challenges that you encounter. You know, you guys have to juggle a lot of different requirements and all the things you've just described. So, you know, what do you encounter from a challenge standpoint on a day-to-day basis?
Taylor, do you want to start with this one? I've got a couple ideas, but I want to hear your perspectives too, because we are in geographically different locations with different processes.
One thing that really comes to mind, like to the front of my brain, because it's been an issue like today, is things that are out of our control, like the weather has caused shipments to be delayed, and not even shipments. I have requested paperwork from the USDA that's supposed to be coming, and that's been delayed because of paperwork. And then that paperwork is supposed to be sent to a consolidator, and then that consolidator is waiting on things that are out of their control. So there's lots of things that are out of our control that cause these delays and these hiccups. And then, you know, clients and other coworkers that are relying on us are getting frustrated. And so kind of reminding everyone to keep an open mind and have a little bit of grace as we run into those things and those challenges that are out of our control as we work on these projects, just because I wish they could all go smoothly and I wish that they could all go exactly as planned. But that's kind of the fun part of our job, is we run into these these little hiccups, and we get to be problem solvers and, you know, do the best that we can to make these shipments successful. Another struggle that I have had is clients will come too late, or they will decide halfway through that they want to export to a different country, and those requirements that should have been met at the beginning, or when we decided that it should be EU, and then you decide to send to China, like this doesn't work that way, and requirements are just can be so vastly different that something that is exportable to one country is not going to be exportable to another country, and that causes a lot of frustration.
Yeah, and Taylor, that describes it perfectly, and I definitely wanted to get your perspective, because one of the challenges we have is we are dealing with a huge country in different geographical locations. So one of the many challenges that we do face is the testing requirements in Maryland may be vastly different from the testing requirements in Texas, specifically because the disease status of Texas is different than the disease status of Maryland. What comes to mind is vesicular stomatitis. We see that in Texas. We don't see that in Maryland. Requirements for testing in Texas may be different than requirements for testing in Maryland just due to that one thing. So trying to keep up with 50 states and make sure that we're communicating testing and all those geographical differences that could affect the testing to clients kind of brings me into my next challenge, is publishing the resources. So we truly believe that the most successful way to allow our clients to minimize risk is by educating our teams, educating our clients, even educating the people wanting to purchase the embryos internationally. This is what you need to communicate, you know, person in Australia to our client in the USA. Education is key. So one of the challenges that we've faced is how do we publish resources for our clients when we're dealing with so much variability? So we've worked on trying to communicate a language and sampling methods that could accommodate for that different testing needed in Maryland versus Texas. So sometimes you'll see that we are going to ask our production teams, please pull a serum separator tube on this donor. And that does lead to questions. Well, you said that there was no testing on this donor. I know, but if we're dealing with a huge geographical area and we want to minimize risk that for whatever reason, the embryos could not be exported, we're going to try to be as proactive as possible. We're going to pull those extra samples. We're going to make sure that everybody's educated to the best of our knowledge. We're going to ask that people communicate with us in advance as much as possible. I tell Taylor, I tell the rest of our team, this job is about minimizing risk, because as Taylor highlighted earlier, anything could happen. Papers could be delayed. Tanks could not get to the airport on time. Testing could come back unfavorably. Samples could break in transit going from our collection center to the testing lab. So the biggest challenge of this job is not to make sure everything goes perfectly, because that's just setting yourself up for trouble, but to make sure that we're minimizing risk and we're preparing us, we're preparing our production teams, and we're preparing our clients for every sort of backup method to make sure that we can ultimately make embryos, send them internationally, and help make our clients money.
Yeah, I love that, minimizing risk, because, I mean, we're all humans. Mistakes happen. What can we do to make sure that the mistakes don't happen? And because, like you said, things are out of our control. So I guess on the flip side of that, what are some keys to a successful export project? Or if you could tell clients, what is the one most important thing that they should know when exporting for the first time?
Advance notice. Taylor, what would you say? What's your first go-to when it comes to this
question?
My
first go-to would be, if you can, decide the destination. Decide that country that you want to export to, because that really sets up the whole production plan. And it's one of those things that if you were to change in the middle, it can cause a lot of issues. So knowing where you want to go right off the bat, and I know that sometimes can be hard, but that creates a super successful shipment.
Oh, Taylor is so right. Because as I said earlier, that, you know, just make sure your embryos are trypsin treated. But in reality, Taylor's more accurate in the sense that embryos, once they're frozen, need to be stored in different locations depending on the country of export. So I said, yeah, trypsin treat your embryos, everything will be fine. But in reality, if you're trying to freeze embryos for the EU, you need to make sure the semen's qualified, and you need to make sure that those embryos are stored accordingly at Transova, which will automatically be done. If you say, hey, I want to export embryos to the EU, make sure we got the semen, everything else will flow. But it all starts with that first inquiry. Hey, I'm thinking about making these embryos eligible for export to the EU. That's all you have to say to your client service rep, and then they'll get the ball rolling with us. Our lines of communication are super open, pretty much with all of our CSRs. So if you can't reach one of us directly, you reach through your CSR and be like, hey, I need to know by tomorrow. We will do our best to accommodate. Sometimes we need maybe 24 hours just to be able to contact the bull stud and say, hey, is this collection eligible for Paraguay? Is this collection eligible for Australia? That takes a little bit of time sometimes. So knowing the country in advance would probably actually be the key to the most successful export project. And if you don't know, or if you've got four countries in mind, reach out to your CSR, give them all four countries, and we will make sure that at the very minimum, you know, we qualify them for the country that has the most intense health requirements, the most testing. And then ultimately, that may be a decision that you have to make as a client. Do I want to invest this much money in testing, invest this much in semen? And that's something that we can work with you on. It's a very, very subjective question, but we're here to provide you all the information to help make an educated decision if possible. And that's easier in advance, if possible.
You bring up a good point, Emma, that I think is worth noting. There are requirements for different countries that go in sort of like a health status order, maybe a higher health status. How am I trying to say that?
I completely understand. A higher.
Do you know what I'm saying? So like an example would be if we were to treat an export project as an Australia export, that embryo could very easily go to Canada just because the Canadian requirements are lower than what Australia would expect. So there is this sort of health status order of countries. So when you are unsure, Emma, I agree. Give us those four countries that you're interested in. If you're willing to invest in this Australia testing, but then eventually maybe not even send them to Australia, you know, that's up to you as the client, but at least we're covering all our bases.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. I'm so glad you brought that up, that there is kind of a hierarchy of health statuses. We've got really intense health requirements, and we've got more on the minimal side of health requirements. It seems like the farther you go away from the USA, sometimes the more intense the health requirements get, but that's just what I've noticed now. So thanks, Taylor, for bringing that up. That's great.
So just to reiterate, what I hear you saying is, if I'm unsure, the safest thing to do is aim for the country with the highest health requirements, because your embryos are likely to be exported or have more options for export. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in general, but still give all those countries, man, because you never know those sneaky requirements and that language and those health certificates. We want to make sure that we're being due diligent and following through on those four countries that your client may be requesting.
Sure. And the other thing I hear you say is that it's communication, communication, communication. I mean, if a client is not communicating with our team or with you about what countries they're thinking about, you know, that can kind of derail the whole export process. And so if you are in the back of your mind potentially thinking about it, it's worth saying it, even if you're not sure.
Absolutely. At minimum 2 weeks in advance, if you're shipping to Australia or if you're shipping to the EU, then try to aim for 4 weeks, but at minimum 2 weeks in advance.
Perfect.
More information is always better. That's always been my motto. More information is always better.
Is there anything you guys, you know, that Emily and I have been talking with you and through some of these requirements, is there anything you would add or things we haven't asked you that you think are important for clients to know?
We totally recognize that exporting is expensive. The testing is expensive. The USDA endorsement is expensive. The shipping is expensive. So if you're ever concerned, please feel free to reach out to us and we'd love to give you an explanation, a cost summary, anything that we can do to help make sure that the investment that you put into creating export embryos is worth it, or, you know, is of a good investment as opposed to just, you know, spending money on Australia testing with no market. So we can at least try to guide you and give you the information to help make a decision. But we recognize that it's not cheap and things just keep getting more expensive these days.
What would you say is the shelf life for embryos that have gone through all the testing and, you know, say you're exporting to the EU and I made embryos a year ago. Obviously, genetics probably have been outdated or whatever, but, you know, how fast are these regulations changing that, you know, do you ever come across where embryos qualified and then a month later they're like, nope, sorry. Like, does that happen?
Yeah. So it's crazy that you asked this question because I'm working on a project currently with a client who wants to export some embryos that were made in 2016. And we did a really good job with blood sample storage back in 2016. We have since then. We're always doing a really good job of that. But I was able to go back into our deep freeze and find some stored serum to send for testing to send those embryos. So, however, the requirements for those tests are different than they were in 2016. So I had those samples sent and they unfortunately came back positive, which disqualified those embryos because back in 2016, the requirements were different. But, you know, I don't, Emma, you give us a little bit more, you have more experience on that, but that's just an example that comes to mind is they do change and they change frequently.
Oh yeah. And we're at the mercy of political relationships between countries. We're at the mercy of, you know, international shipping and the negotiations between countries. I mean, that's just one of the risks that we try to mitigate by taking those extra samples. Like Taylor stated, recently in 2021, the EU made a huge change to the requirements that ultimately required going forward with a little bit of a buffer time, but we had to transition clients to getting used to utilizing that EU qualified semen that has to be transported under EU qualified conditions, which means that it has to be transported from the bull stud under seal or from an approved collection facility or storage facility under seal to our facility. I mean, those handling requirements were vastly different. And because of that, during a certain transitionary period, if embryos were not created under the new requirements, they could not go to the EU after a certain date. So that all occurred in between 2021 and 2022. Still feels like just yesterday because we tried to encourage clients, if you have embryos in inventory, you want to move before a certain date, please let us know. Most of this time, We do a pretty good job of trying to keep open lines of communication with organizations in the United States, USDA, AETA, IETS, organizations that kind of help advise on these international requirements, keeping open lines of communication and always being aware that requirements could change. But it's a risk. Exporting is always a risk.
Well, I appreciate Emma and Taylor, your guys' insight into this whole embryo export process. And I give you guys kudos and props because you obviously have to manage a lot of intricacies in regards to requirements and testing and all of the exports rules and regulations that probably make your head spin on a day-to-day basis. So thank you for your job that you've done at Transova and joining us for the podcast today. We appreciate your knowledge very much.
Thank you guys so much. And if anybody ever has a question about exports, our general Transova export email is togexports@transova.com. And about 5 different people will see that email. So if you ever have a question, please feel free to shoot an email there or contact your client service rep.
Very good. Thank you so much for your time today. And we'll make sure to drop the information for that email in the podcast notes and on social media as well.
Thank you so much. Thanks, yep. Taylor. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next time on the Powered by Transova podcast.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.